to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
All right, friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, porn burger chef, Batman, and illegal mezcal ambassador.
I'm Eddie Kim, D.C. barman around town at Maidan, room 11. I'll call myself the Albert.
Okay.
To your Batman.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Every week, we have a shift drink, and we swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. Today, we're finally crossing the line from the cool, collected, spick-and-span front of the house.
Yeah, right.
We're not all pansies, okay? To the sweltering, cramped, and chaotic back of the house with Alex McCoy, chef owner of Lucky Buns, right around the corner here in Adams Morgan, D.C.
Hey, hey.
And we also have Gerald Addison, co-executive chef, and sometimes he likes to call me his boss, or thinks he's my boss, but he's a co-executive chef at Maidan as well, and Compass Rose, both of them just off of 14th Street. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Welcome, gentlemen. So this is Shift Drink, but today we have Shift Drinks.
Yes. Like this.
What do we got?
I went with, I guess it's Negroni time for me today. I'm on a big Negroni kick. I'm usually a beer guy, but our bartender Joaquin down at Lucky Buns makes, my opinion, the best Negroni in town. So
you know,
I found myself drinking like hundreds of these.
He has that reputation around town. What does that stem from?
It's just deadly.
With his reputation of making Negronis.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the Italian roots, I think.
It's
inside him.
Why the Negroni for you? What's
like I said, I've been digging this a lot recently. I mean, this has become kind of like our go-to shift drink at Lucky Buns, and I didn't drink too many of these beforehand. I'm usually like a porter stout, like dark beer kind of guy, but I've just find myself, this has kind of become like when I go out to a bar now, I've just been like Negroni. Love the bitterness of it. You know, I love the little bit of the acidity. I love like kind of that, depending on how people make it, it's always different. That's the other cool thing. It's like,
true,
no matter what bartender you go to, it's going to be a different Negroni. So, you know, you feel like you're getting something new every time.
That's kind of interesting because over at Lucky Buns, it's a burger bar. It's a total locals joint. I saw pictures. You guys have live music on the weekends.
Live music, yeah.
It's kind of contraindicative of having a Negroni.
we like to mix it up. I think the way we see Lucky Buns is less of a, you know, just like a burger joint and more of like a place for people to like relax and have good food and good drinks, listen to good music. We play rugby. We've got, you know, a little bit of everything, you know, just to be a spot you can just let go. And especially for like the industry people in the city, like just a place you can kind of come and just sit down and like shut up and not have to worry about anything else going on, and just you'd be able to like lose yourself in whatever your poison is, whether that's a double patty burger or like a Negroni or like a couple of shots. Like you've got something for
right
there.
Right.
They're all vices though.
Yeah, exactly. That's
I imagine it's a little bit of a peekaboo into what your like high school room looked like as well. Like
exactly.
Posters of the Hamburglar and you got.
I figure if I'm gonna spend every day working in one place, I'm gonna have a little bit of something that I like.
Yeah.
Know? Get some live music, watch some rugby, eat some burgers, like I don't have to go anywhere else.
That's right. And so today's Negroni is we have equal parts of Capitoline vermouth, we have some Campari, and some Green Hat gin.
Right,
keeping it local.
If you remember from our previous episode, Kat Amidi is the producer of Capitoline vermouth, so happy to
shout out to our girl.
Good stuff.
He's absolutely delicious.
Who is this? The brothers and sisters bartenders made this bad boy.
This was yours truly.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, delicious. I was going to give a shout out to those guys because they make a great Negroni here, too.
They do.
At the bar. And
they provide us glasses.
Stir with your finger.
Yeah.
Little Gaz Regan stuff.
All right.
Those essential oils are very important.
That's right. What else are we drinking?
Gerald?
We're drinking a Schlitz.
Now we waited until we get all open these.
I can't say that I've ever had a Schlitz after work, but I do like drinking light, cheap pilsners of all sorts.
Now this is the Red Bull version.
This is the extra long malt liquor.
Yes.
Oh, got the tall.
I don't know
too,
exactly how we got these, but we were.
I'm going to say sometimes shift drinks aren't chosen; they're hoisted upon you, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And so we found these at work, and I think we are all going to enjoy someone else's mistake. So
all right, perfect.
All right, cheers. But Gerald, you were mentioning before that this has a very nostalgic element to it for you.
As a 16-year-old, Schlitz was my probably preferred beer. It's what somebody would buy me. And
did you grow up in the Midwest?
No, I didn't.
You grew up here.
I grew up here, and that you just stole one of the truths that you asked me to give you earlier, but it's fine. I tended to drink the Blue Bull, but the Red Bull, I guess, will suffice today.
The Blue Bull is one of the first things that truly fucked me up.
Are you from the Midwest?
I've dabbled around the country, but yeah, a lot of Midwest.
And do you think the Red Bull is better than the Blue Bull, or vice versa? I don't know. I can't really. It's been a while.
I don't know. I've heard one of these bowls gives you wings, but I'm not sure.
Oh, goodness, the tasting notes on these.
Yeah. We'll find out later. Then we also have, to accompany this nice little Red Bull,
the classic shot and a beer combination. So what's your shot?
I mean, my shot depends. I tend to drink whiskey, but recently, I'd say in the last year or so, it's been mezcal a lot, and I think Billy Gull is an excellent example.
That is our that is our house shot of choice at Maidan. So
sometimes with Chartreuse.
Mez truce, as,
yeah,
as our GM likes to call it.
I'm a little biased, obviously, because I work with Eli Gal, but it's a fun one. It's 100% Espadin, and that's all I'll promote it. Oh. Eddie's giving me the look.
No. Well, I'm not going to promote Schlitz.
Yeah.
I will promote Schlitz all day.
I'll tell you, this has nostalgic value for me, too, because my dad had a convenience store here in the city. Way up near the Metro Bus Depot on 14th Street in Crittenden. And as like a young, you know, middle schooler, I sold Schlitz to people. I would help them out as a store. It'd be like Blue Bull, Red Bull. So
I love it.
$2.
I will say Mezcal is definitely my shift drink of choice lately. We just got back from Tulum, Mexico, and that's basically all I drank was different varieties of Mezcal and some kind of fruit. It was pretty awesome.
Maybe, are we allowed to toast to you, Matthew?
Yeah, what happened over there?
I think we can toast. I don't know.
Had some big news, I think, right?
Had some pina coladas, hung out on the beach, got engaged. thank you. It was, it was a big trip. It was fun, and we're both very excited.
Yeah, if there's any one place to... Well, I joked around with you whether you were going to do a destination wedding or not. You're definitely not that far ahead in planning, but...
Where
would you want to go?
I mean, ideally for me, if you're listening, Elizabeth, probably Oaxaca. But who knows? We're open. We're totally open.
Should we throw it at you guys? Neither of you are attached at the moment, right?
Well, you know, I'm attached to a restaurant, that's for sure. You know, but definitely not in the marriage zone yet, that's for sure.
I can see the first beads of sweat trickling down their foreheads. This is only the first question, gentlemen. Right on. Well, should we progress into our two truths, one lie?
Yeah.
Two truths, one lie.
All right, so since we have two chefs here who, I mean, you're aware of, you've met each other a couple of times, but you're not mm-hmm. that close, I think we should do two truths and one lie against each other.
I think that's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to note that Eddie exposed two of my truths already. so I'm going to have to start, like, thinking really quick.
All right, so we'll have Alex lie to you first here.
Okay.
Well, how do you know it's a lie? This first one might be a truth.
That's true.
You never know.
That we never know.
So are we going all three, or is it just one, two, three? Or are we going to go one and one?
One, two, three.
One, two, three.
All right. So I guess number one, I was once denied entry to Heathrow Airport and sent back to the United States because I drank too much scotch on an airplane. Number two, obsessed with mayonnaise. I put mayonnaise on literally everything.
And number three, I was once an extra in Step Up 2 in the Streets. Wow. And that...
Wow. I'm glad we're not playing. I don't want to have to choose between those.
That's good. I have an idea.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, so now I'm supposed to guess.
Yeah.
You know, the Step Up one initially is like what I'm thinking can't be real, but it's just so... so good that I hope that it's true. But that's the one that's calling out to me as being ridiculous.
I feel like Alex has like hips that don't lie.
I was a very famous cellist in that movie. That's a truth. I was actually an extra in Step Up 2 in the Streets.
Now, do you play the cello?
I have no idea how to play the cello, but
they're just like that guy.
I had to walk around holding like a giant cello for hours that day and pretend I did play the cello.
You do look like a cellist, actually.
I have that look. I have that cellist look. It's the shoulders, I guess. You lift up
a little bigger, cello. Yeah. It's a little longer musician.
Exactly.
So what is the lie?
So lie is, it's mayonnaise. I can't fucking stand mayonnaise.
Really?
It's disgusting. It's just the worst. But you know, the funny thing is, two of my favorite things are chicken salad and tuna salad. It's like covered in mayonnaise, and I don't understand why I love it so much. Because like, if you put just a dollop of mayonnaise anywhere near my food, I can smell it. I just lose my mind. I can't handle it. But I'll eat gallons and gallons of tuna salad. Like, I love it.
That makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense at all. People make fun of me all day.
Is it like a textural thing?
It's like a yogurt. Mayonnaise, it's like a white creamy thing. I just don't like.
Interesting.
Sour cream, can't stand it. Ranch dressing, can't do it.
Huh.
I hate it.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know why.
I feel personally attacked right now.
For a man who's gone into sandwiches.
I have it all over the menu too. It's like, I can smell, I know how it should smell and I can, you know, I'll taste it. But for the most part, like I just make other people make it and I kind of look at it and I'm like, well, that looks good. That looks like mayonnaise. So. So they just go ahead and put it on the sandwich.
Sounds like a true executive chef right there. So, Gerald, it's your turn.
Okay. Let me think about this for a second because now I'm feeling like...
I'll buy you some more time. Are we going to gloss over the denied entry on the flight thing?
Oh, yeah. Let's.
Oh, you want to hear that story?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Because we know you're a world traveler, so I...
Well, like I said, you know, I'm a Scotch guy, and Scotch has been probably one of my... greatest and worst kind of vices. It's a long story, but I'll kind of condense it. But basically, it's like five or six years ago. My buddy who lives overseas, he lives in London. It was a New Year's Eve party, and he called me and he's like, "We've got this crazy New Year's Eve party going on, and you know, you need to come out. Like, you've got to fly out. You've got to fly out to London. We're gonna have this big all day party, and then we're gonna have New Year's Eve and all that stuff." And I'm like, "I'm gonna do that. That's what I'm gonna do." And so I bought a ticket and I'm just like, you know, fuck it. Let's go out. I'm going to go out for a month. We're going to do New Year's Eve. We're going to just like figure it out. No itinerary. Just have a good time. And he's one of my buddies. I've known him a long time. He grew up here in D.C. We kind of grew up together and he's a big entrepreneur. He just opened, started a tech startup in London called Akasa, which is brilliant. It's kind of a little shameless plug for him. But we, you know, we constantly have this like conversation going on about like business and about restaurants in London. And at that point we were in this, like, this big, like food truck London kind of thing where we were just going back and forth talking about what it would take to open up a food truck in London. And kind of in the midst of writing these emails, you know, we were also talking about this trip. So, so I'm getting on a red eye flight. I kind of grabbed this email, printed it out, took it with me. It had his address on it. Hopped on the red eye, and you know, my thought was, I'm flying in real hot into London. I'm gonna get in, it's 6 a.m. on New Year's Eve. You know, everyone's gonna be partying. I gotta catch up. So I just started like just ripping double scotches at the airport, just back to back. Cause I figured, like, if I'm gonna come into this,
I feel like scotch is not super rippable either.
It is at the airport. Yeah. It is when it's free on a British Airways flight.
Yeah.
So basically, I just started drinking because I'm like, I'm gonna come in, I'm just gonna come to this party like coming real hot. Yeah, just, you know, have a good time. And I think I came in a little too hot. I got a little too hot on that airplane. Didn't sleep at all. And so I got in like 6 a.m. you know, and I forgot, and this is a, you know, this is a lesson for everyone, always fill out your customs declaration form and all that stuff. I forgot to fill out the customs declaration form. So I get right there to customs, and I'm just like really kind of a little shaky, and the nice lady at customs, she asked for the declaration form, and I realized I hadn't filled it out, so I handed her this email. And I was like, it's right here, you know, and here it is. So, of course, she reads the email, and it's talking about opening up, like, a food truck in London. Yeah. So she's like, all right, well, you're going to go sit in that little area over there. And this is kind of like the sin bin. It's, like, right. In the middle of, you know, all of Heathrow Airport. Everyone looks at you, and they know you've done something bad.
Right.
And at this point, I just kind of thought that, you know, this was going to be, like, a little pat down, like, just, like, one of those security measures. So they, you know, they grab me, they grab my bag, and they start going through it. And I was like, oh, they're looking for drugs. Like, that's what it is, you know? And I'm sitting there talking to them, like, there's no drugs in these bags. Like, they're, like, ripping the bags apart. I'm like, there's no drugs. And she's like, just relax, relax. And, like, they get through, you know, ripping open this bag. And I'm like, see, I told you there's no drugs. And she's like, no, well, you've got to go with this guy. We got to ask you a bunch of questions. And so they put me in this, like, little, in like, room, and two people were just, like, asking me questions about, like, who's your sponsor? How much money do you have? Like,
who's your daddy?
Like, all these questions. And you know, I had, like, no answers. I'm like, well, I mean, I don't have, like, bank statements on me or anything. And they wouldn't let me, like, pull up, like, bank accounts or anything.
Right,
you know,
right,
you have
right.
to have it on your person. So they were
you're like... you're in the sin bin, man.
Yeah, I'm in the sin bin. Like, and I still thought this was about drugs. The whole time, like, yeah. So I kept saying, like, I don't have drugs, guys. Like, there's no drugs here. Like, I'm completely way off the map. Yeah. I'm like, there's no drugs. Like, yeah. With this, come on, like, just let me go. I've got to go to a party. And
how long before you're bent over?
Yes, I did. And so finally, like, they're like, do you have anybody that can, like, corroborate your story? And I didn't have my buddy Nick's phone number, but I did have this other guy's phone number in my phone, who's, like, the craziest guy I know. And I'm just to kind of give you a little, like, background of this guy. Like, we were in Thailand together, and, you know, he went off with this, like, Canadian girl, like, into the ocean that, you know,
right.
to hook up, and all his, like, pants were all washed away. So he had no, like, passport or wallet or anything. So we gave him some money.
He was in his own sin-in.
Yeah. Like, we gave him some money to go back to Bangkok, get a flight home. And he ended up winning a motorcycle in a poker game and spending 6 more months in Thailand with, like, money that he was wired to him, and just, like, ended up, like, with no passport, just, like, driving all over, like, Thailand. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to call this kid. And so I give him the number, and, like, in the process of them talking to him, he admitted to, like, working illegally in the UK. And so, of course, immediately they were like, you're in the gulag, like, you're out. So they send me to, like, the prison, the actual, like, jail in Heathrow Airport, which is very similar to a DMV waiting room, but with, like, a lot more crying.
Right.
You know, it's just, like, really sad. And I sat there for, like, 6 hours, kind of, like, going back and forth with these immigration officers before they finally came to me with, like, two guys with, like, MP5 rifles and, like, escorted me into a paddy wagon. And they're like, you know, you're going home. And took me into, like, the back of Heathrow, of, like, down on the tarmac, and, like, put me in the back of a 747 and basically was like, see you later.
So the moral of the story is don't drink scotch.
Fill out your customs declaration form. That's always a good one. So yeah, but the what actually ended up being pretty cool about the story is that because of the way I flew out, I celebrated New Year's Eve in European airspace, and then when I landed with like 45 minutes left. So I ended up making it back and celebrating New Year's Eve on two continents in one night.
There you go.
Which is kind of a cool story.
It's pretty baller.
So that happened, yeah.
Gerald.
Okay, I have them. All right, my first one is I started working in kitchens when I was 14. The next would be I went to my first casino in Kathmandu when I was 12 years old. And the next is I was once strip searched on a French train.
These all sound appealing.
Oh my God. That's a hard one to pick.
You've seen some things, my man.
Yeah, I'm going to. A couple.
Alex, yeah.
Yeah.
It's.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
With your reasoning.
I'm going to go with. Because I really hope the other two are true. I'm going to go with you start working in a kitchen at 14. Because that's the most benign of the two.
He got it.
Oh, so, yes, yes.
I started working in kitchens when I was 15.
There we go. Oh,
yeah, so Eddie was telling me that you lived in Nepal for a little bit.
I didn't live there. I spent a good amount of time there. Okay. My parents were doing traveling there for work, and I went there probably three times when I was a kid.
To Palais Costocha?
No, just to Kathmandu.
Okay. Okay. I used to live in Nepal. Okay. And that's just how you say what's up. Oh. But also, did you live in Nepal?
Don't speak Nepali.
Right on. Right on. I speak very... that was the only other language I ever became fluent in. And outside of Nepal, it's there's not much use to it.
So for being someone who grew up in D.C., and this is a very common kind of situation for anyone who grows up in D.C., your parents are maybe diplomats or work for the Foreign Service or something like that. Was that your situation?
No, neither of my parents are diplomats. They actually run an art gallery together. That's what they've done since I was born, basically.
Oh.
That's super cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, we have a bunch of questions to ask both of you, but we're going to head out for a quick little break. You guys are listening to Shift Drink, recording live out of the line.
Today's break song, it's called Hit 'Em Up. It's by a local producer named Kido, K-I-E-D-O. SoundCloud.com/Kido. We'll be back momentarily on Shift Drink. Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio here at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. I'm Eddie Kim.
And I'm Matthew Ramsey.
And we are actually joined by the first time two chefs, Gerald Addison and Alex McCoy. And so far, our discussion has been kind of wild, actually, compared to a lot of the front of the house people we've been talking to. But I think we want to kind of switch gears a little bit and kind of talk about what you kind of a little bit of your backgrounds and kind of the type of food that you cook. There is a kind of a theme with your background so far. Both of you are incredibly well traveled. Incredibly, I think that was like I was reading up a little bit on you, Alex. And on your Food Network profile, because you were on the Food Network Star season 11.
Yeah, Food Network Star. Yeah, that was a good time. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that was good. I don't know if I'm gonna pursue the whole TV chef thing. That's really not my speed. But it was definitely a lot. We made a lot of good friends. It was a crazy, stressful, fun experience, and I'm glad I did it. But it's
quick fire question. Yeah. Giada De Laurentiis or Bobby Flay?
Ooh, Bobby, all day long, man. That's my boy. He's like my spirit. I'll tell you something real quick about Bobby, what I really respect about him. You know, you think about, as a chef, and I'm sure you think the same thing, like you see some of these TV chefs and you're like, you know, would they cut it in the kitchen and all that? You know, Bobby started cooking when he was like really young. And when I met him, the first thing he did is he came out, they did the intro, and you know, everyone else kind of went back into their dressing rooms, and he kind of hung out and he was watching everyone cooking, and he was just standing there, and you could tell he was watching everyone's technique, like what they were doing, what they were making, because you had like a mix of entertainers, chefs, like home cooks and stuff like that. And he was just, you could tell, like, just from a chef like looking at another chef, like he was just sizing everyone up.
Yeah,
quietly and judging you.
And he's like, you know, he's very well spoken, but he's a New York guy, so like immediately when he relaxes, he gets like a little of that swagger. He's like, what are you cooking? What is this? What is this? What are you doing? And he's like real quick, you know.
That's a very good impression of him, actually.
But he's awesome. Like he hung out and he watched everyone. He was giving a little bit of advice here and there. And you could tell that he was like 90% chef, like 10% TV guy. Like it was cool to see that. Like made me feel good about,
good to know,
about TV chefs, because he was like, you could tell he's all in on it. I have a lot of respect for him for that.
Right on. But yeah, I mean, you've also traveled, Gerald. And so we kind of want to talk about, so the history and evolution of humankind is kind of closely connected to the flavors and the transference of ingredients, techniques, and technology. I mean, we live in a day and age where you can go down to 18th Street here in Adams Morgan and you can have Korean, Mexican, Ethiopian, and burgers. All this is basically just, you know, kind of steps away. Both of you guys cook with global inspiration. Can you talk about what that means in this day and age? And Jerome, maybe we'll start with you.
I guess the reason I like to cook the things that I like to cook has a lot to do with, like, I don't know, I never really felt like I had my own food culture per se, and I feel like I tried to find that elsewhere. And growing up here, I grew up actually a couple blocks away from the line, and when I was young, 18th Street was all Ethiopian restaurants, and then maybe a couple like Salvadorian places in the mix, and I just had much more fun going to these places than going anywhere else. And as I got older and started learning French food and, you know, going the more like classic route, that just like didn't interest me.
You went to culinary school.
I went to culinary school.
You learned all the old techniques.
Yeah.
But it just didn't click with you.
Yeah, and I think at a point I only wanted to work at really high-end restaurants, and that kind of food just didn't really speak to me as much as like going to a place where people were really cooking something a little bit more, I don't want to say proper, but more like of their culture. Or that's what I enjoyed eating.
Yeah.
So when I got to the point where I was running kitchens, like all I wanted to make was like very specific references of specific dishes, which I had tried before, rather than, you know, making something with like a protein and a puree and a sauce and the kind of more classic route that you could go about it. Like I wanted to get as close to one dish that I would obsess over. And now with the food that I'm cooking now, like that's exactly how I approach it. You know, we traveled a lot for the restaurant, and we cooked with a lot of different people, and we ate at a lot of places.
Now we're talking about Maidan.
We're talking about Maidan now, yeah.
North African, Middle Eastern cuisine. It's beautiful, first of all, but the food is great. But you traveled to, I believe, 5 countries?
Collectively, we traveled to 5 countries. I was in Georgia, Lebanon, and Turkey. And everything on the menu is like very, very direct representations of things that we either tried there or we had here, like cooking with other people. And you know, you just do your best to like emulate something, and people figured this out like much earlier than I did. So why not, you know, pay homage to it by just doing your best to capture those flavors or that experience. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about this restaurant is we get a lot of people from that part of the world coming to eat there, and so many people tell me that, you know, that's wrong. You can't do it that way. Like, that's not how you're supposed to make baba ganoush. And I'll say, okay, like, what are you doing that I'm not doing? Like, I'm only taking it from a specific thing that somebody has shown me. So it's interesting, like, when all these dishes are so near and dear to people, like, every country makes them differently. Every family makes them differently.
Absolutely.
And, like, I love that it's wrong. Like, I want to learn different ways because maybe there's a version of it that I like more than the version that I've, you know, that I'm making currently.
That's like almost, it's being more than just global. It's actually being hyper, hyper local to a single family. Almost.
Yeah, no, a lot of them are very
specific. Grandmother who cooks it in a certain way.
Right. Like, we have a dish on that, like, we cooked, like, in somebody's backyard in Guria in western Georgia, like, somewhere that so few people go to, but, like, is so amazing to me because I get to bring this, like, little piece of this place that, you know, people probably wouldn't have seen before, but when I went there, the people were so amazing and so inviting, and that was, like, the biggest connect with all the places that we went to. Like, people were so nice to us and so excited that we wanted to learn about their culture.
And which dish is this?
That is the ribeye at Maidan. Okay. Chris and I cooked that in somebody's backyard over a fire pit out of a stone pot that this guy had carved out of a mountain. It just gets all sorts of ridiculous.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Alex? You wanna?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of mirroring a little bit what you said, I think that, you know, strictly from a chef's perspective, I think a good menu is a representation of like the journey that person's taken. And I think that it doesn't matter where you're from, you know, if you're able to put on a menu what you love, then it comes through that much more. So, you know, whether you've come from another country or whether you're someone who's traveled, you know, if that's your story, that's the story you should be telling people through your food. And I think that's really important. You know, both my parents grew up, actually my father lived in Kathmandu when he was a child.
Oh, really?
Interestingly enough, yeah. But, you know...
I have a very important question for him.
Yeah. Is that... Well, I can't answer that for him, but... you know, I grew up in a family where my both my parents grew up overseas their entire lives. They never lived in the United States. I mean, they lived in the United States for like brief periods, but you know, my father lived in Iran and in Kathmandu and in Greece and then London, and my mother in Switzerland and South Africa and Peru, and they actually met in London. So as a child, you know, I was raised not so much on like Americana as much as it was like soccer and rugby, and like this story of my dad running from like hashish dealers in Morocco, and you know, my mom being in going on, you know, in South Africa, like
sure,
doing having barbecues and things like that. And you know, I didn't grow up with like a very American kind of palate. Like, we didn't cook like burgers and hot dogs, you know, it was a lot of French and European and South American, and you know, a lot of different influences. And that really, you know, kind of that sense of like travel is what really caused me to like travel, you know, traveling through a young age, you know, caused me to travel as we, you know, as I got older. You know, for me, it was less about like trying to tell, like say, you know, this is good, so I want to cook it. It was more like, this is what I love. This is, you know, this is what gets me excited. And, this is what I have a connection to, and I want to be able to share that with people.
Right.
And, you know, it was, I tell people all the time, but like Thailand saved my life. And that was kind of the moment for me, you know, professionally and personally when, and, you know, I'm sure you guys have all experienced this. Like, you know, I started cooking really young, and, you know, the industry can really wear you down.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I literally came into work and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And that scared the shit out of me, because it's the one thing I've always wanted to do for the rest of like my whole life. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like, I don't want to do this. And it yeah. just like, and I remember I quit, and it was this restaurant I was working. It was the only time in my life I ever quit. And I woke up the next day and I was just like, what do I do? And I went on Craigslist and I started looking for, you know, ads for chefs. And then, you know, I stopped myself and I said, like, you know, I don't want to end up being like some bitter, old, salty chef, because I hate what I do.
Yeah.
So I really want to miss it. So I ended up going on a kayak and buying a one-way ticket to Thailand, and ended up spending a couple months there. And it was just this great moment of like, I kind of like eat, pray, loved myself like throughout Thailand for like a couple months, and it saved me. And that just being in another place and pulling myself out of like kind of the bullshit of working in restaurants and seeing how people are cooking on the streets and cooking in people's homes, it just reinvigorated me. And that would, you know, and I started, just kept coming back for years and years and years and years and years, and I just wanted to learn more. I mean, that travel gave me that passion again.
Yeah.
And I'm forever thankful for the people of Thailand, the culture, and everything that I learned, you know, from that. And that's what I want to give back.
You know, I mean, so cooking. And both of you have incredibly personal stories of your travels and the foods that you encountered and how it's kind of basically shaped who you are since your children. But now we kind of see a lot of these new cuisines coming up in the American, you know, hot fine dining, for instance. Mm-hmm. We see restaurants like Bad Sing, which is Filipino cuisine, which is kind of was named by a bunch of other publications as like the new hot cuisine these days. Like, what is American cuisine today? I mean, we see you going out, bringing these cuisines back. Now we see kind of immigrants showing their stuff.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think that what we are as Americans is we're a mix of a lot of people from different places. My family's Irish. You know what I mean? You know, I'm not indigenous to this country. No one sitting in this room is indigenous to this country. There's only, you know, only American Indians can say, Native Americans rather, can say that they have ownership over, you know, this place. And so I think when you think of countries that have so many different cultures, I think it's very important that everyone feels comfortable expressing themselves and expressing where they come from and expressing their culture. Because, you know, we live in a time and a place where, you know, there's a lot of turmoil between people. And I think that the one thing that's consistent that we can all agree on is good food and good drinks.
Absolutely.
And that's something that brings us all together. And I think the more that we share where we all come from and share the food of our families, or the food that we've learned, or, you know, because we all grow up in different ways and grow up in different places, the more we share our stories with each other, I think at least in my opinion, I think that we can understand each other a lot better. And I think that, you know, right now especially, I think we all need to understand each other a little bit better and respect each other a little bit more. And I think food is just one of those magical things that bring people together. And so I think that, you know, whether you're someone who travels or whether someone you're cooking, who's cooking the food that they grew up with, I don't think anyone should be afraid to cook the things that they love and express themselves and express their journey and express, you know, their history and their family. I think it just, it helps everyone to understand each other and respect each other more.
Our diversity is definitely a gift. Gerald, did you have anything to add?
We're talking about contentious times, and Gerald, at our restaurant in Maidan, we were serving food that actually is very, very political at times, actually. Like, how do you bridge that gap?
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, we run into this weird thing where a lot of these dishes exist in many countries, and I mean, even the countries, like the borders that are drawn, only existed in the last 50, 70 years. Like, so a lot of them are sort of irrelevant anyway. But, you know, you get into like a lot of weird discussions. Like, you know, Israel, I think, is the first one that people like to talk about, and there people say like, what is Israeli food? And, you know, there's a lot of hard feelings about things, and you know, I have no political stance in this sense. Like, I just want to cook food, I just want to make people happy, and it just starts to get really hazy and weird. And like, this part of the world, especially because of all of the political strifes, like, it just, like, I had ran into an issue at Compass Rose where we put on a falafel and somebody had said that it was like Israeli falafel, and you look at, you know, Egyptians would say that falafel is theirs, or from Lebanon, or from Syria. And to me, it was sort of like in the Israeli style, but I didn't necessarily think that people would get so offended by it. And all these people said, oh no, falafel's not from there. I just took some references of places that I liked, and they happened to be Israeli. I happened to think that they made good falafel. Mm-hmm. But then, like, immediately, it's like a shitstorm, and people like,
at the end of the day,
are getting really upset about it.
At the end of the day, it's putting labels on things that don't necessarily need to have labels.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's just, I'm just trying to cook food. It's all sort of irrelevant to me.
Well, I think also just in kitchen culture, too. Like, I mean, we all learn to cook from the sharing of recipes, of knowledge, of cultures. And it's, I mean, you can't put really a copyright on recipes, right?
100%.
And being in this industry, we also, I mean, the very act of cooking is to please other people. We're sharing for other people, right?
I also think it's, for cooking is very interesting because it depends on kind of how you look at it. Whereas if you look at cooking as an art, is ingredients and flavors that are being mixed together. But cooking is also culture, the culture of many different people. You know, so it kind of depends on how, I think the way you frame it, the way you frame it is very important.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's less about using influences. It's when you kind of, when you directly say, I'm making something, you know, you need to be respectful of where that comes from.
Absolutely.
And I think it's not so much that, I agree with you. I don't think a musician should ever be told not to use a musical instrument or a note. I don't think a writer should ever be told not to use a word. I don't think a painter should ever be told not to use a color. I don't think a chef should ever be told not to use a flavor. But we all have an obligation to think about what we're cooking and do it the right way and do it with respect. And I think that's on us. You know, if being influenced by something. Or saying this is directly something from some place, you know, because if, like, you know, let's use the Super Bowl as an example. You know, if you were to say, I'm cooking a Philly cheesesteak, I mean, that means something to people who live in Philly, and they have a lot to say about that. But if you tell, hey, I'm cooking a steak and cheese, I mean, that could be anything.
Right.
You know, that could be anything. I think it's just more important that chefs and restaurateurs think about when they're making a direct correlation to a place or a culture or a specific dish from a region of the world, that they're treating that with respect. And especially, you know, someone who's not from that region, you sure should better do it right.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big Absolutely. Thing. Like, don't bullshit it. You get in there, you do it right, you find the right ingredients, you cook the right way, you show respect for it. That, I mean, that's very, very important. Because people have very strong opinions of that stuff.
Yeah.
And they should. They should.
Well said. We're running out of time a little bit, but we wanted to kind of end with our rapid fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid fire.
That's Eddie Kim's voice, by the way.
Wait, is it?
No.
I'm a robot, but all right. Sometimes.
So these are just kind of first thing you think of. We'll keep it quick. And we'll start with you, Joe. First food dish you ever made for a date?
For a date, I made fresh pasta with spaghetti sauce. I don't know.
Chef Boyardee.
Alex?
Actually, hamburger. That's true story.
Oh, yeah, shit. Yeah. Okay.
All right, I'll go with Alex again. Most recently microwave food.
There's Giant has these like sealed up tikka masala and rice dishes, and I buy them by like the dozen. Delicious. That's so good. I don't care what anyone thinks.
You're doing that culture prep.
I love them. Love them.
I don't actually have a microwave, so I don't know what it is.
You're gonna be that guy.
I don't know if I've ever actually owned a microwave myself.
Oh, I don't have a TV.
No, I do have a TV. Yeah. No, I'm not feeling good about it. I'm waiting to get it. One is a gift from Eddie Kim.
There we go. Biggest fuck up on the line.
Gerald.
I don't know. I remember like a couple times like dropping like a scallop or dropping like a big piece of fish or something in like New Year's Eve when it was just like everything was chaotic and it ruins everything. And I don't know. I can't think of that specific of a...
Okay. Alex, I feel like you have one.
Oh, you know one.
I've got a good one.
Let's keep it brief. 17 years old, I was working at Congressional Country Club, and I didn't know what a panna cotta was, and it was on the menu. So I ordered a panna cotta.
Alex, what is a panna cotta?
Panna cotta is it's basically like a steamed like milk custard,
okay,
with a little bit of, you know, it's delicious. It's what it is. And I didn't know. I just kind of knew what it was. So I ended up spooning a entire bowl full of sour cream into a bowl and sending it out to the table.
Wait, with nothing else on it?
Just sour cream.
Yes. Panna cotta.
Yeah. So a guy got a spoonful of sour cream.
New dessert.
Yeah.
Vietnam.
Yeah.
You have a running theme here. Just white, milky substances you just don't like.
The bane of my existence. They do terrible things to me.
All right, Alex, is there anything you don't eat?
Well, mayonnaise.
Besides mayonnaise, yeah. Anything but except for chicken salad. No, I honestly try to eat as many different things as possible. I don't think there's anything that I refuse to eat besides mayonnaise. I'll eat anything. I'll literally eat anything.
I hate olives.
Oh, man.
It's this weird thing that I try to eat olives maybe once a month to see if I can just, get my palate to, agree.
Well, that's the thing, right? The palate changes every 6 years.
I've been trying
like
for
that.
So long. And now I'm cooking food from so many, olive-growing regions.
Yeah.
And I just can't do it. They just really don't agree with my palate. And I don't know why.
What was the most recent cookbook you purchased?
I bought a Syrian cookbook recently. And it wasn't even in English. I got it in Istanbul. So I don't know exactly
what it's called. So you haven't even used it.
I mean, I've looked at it. It's pretty.
Alex? That would be Porn Burger by Matthew Ramsey.
Hey, listen, if you did... I'm fanning Alex now.
I'm definitely blushing, but also if you didn't say it, I was going to say it. So.
That's actually the most recent cookbook.
No way. Really?
Yeah. Upshur Street Books. Right down the street.
Thank you.
Yeah, true story.
Thank you.
Oh, we'll wait to see one of Matthew's burgers on the menu at Monkey Buns.
I know.
Eddie, you got the next one.
Alex, the best burger you've had.
Oh, man. Number one burger I've had, right now, Stokey Bears, Stoke Newington, London. Guy,
ooh.
Tom Reaney, he's a dream maker. Bacon jam. I mean, the thing with the burgers in London is that people don't subscribe to any particular style. So you
sure.
see a lot of Americana, but what you do see a lot of, which is this fresh baked bread and then this beautiful aged British beef. And so everyone has their own blend and they're using these super high end beef. But they're all very done in very casual manners. And it's, I think maybe in the States, we get very complacent because we're just cooking some good burgers.
Right.
These guys are making some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful burgers in London, and Tom Reen is one of the gods of the burgerdom.
I will say,
so good.
In my time in London, it's funny what they call a burger, right?
Like, yeah, we talked about this, right?
Yeah,
we talked about
it's everything from like a chicken sandwich is a chicken burger, but it's also like you'll see them like they'll smash fry, but they'll smash fry it in mustard.
Yeah, oh yeah, they love
which
that.
Is what they think Americans they like, love this that. Is like this is American culture. Like oh, yeah, yeah, they love their like.
You talk you talk about
oh, that's meat, a whole other episode.
Meat liquor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
meat liquor does that. That's like their big thing.
Yeah,
French is mustard on everything.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I think the best burger I've had was Umami Burger, which is like a West Coast chain. I think there's one in New York also.
Yeah, yeah.
It just really spoke to me for some reason. I really like small, like 4 ounce patties, and it just it was super simple and just like perfect. And it wasn't the kind of burger that I thought I'd be into. I tend to be into like the more classic, you know, American cheese, Thousand mm-hmm. Island dressing kind of situation. But it was just so good, just right on. Perfect.
Which restaurant is at the top of your wish list to Ooh. Experience?
That's so loaded.
I know.
Oh, I don't even know. Like, it would take me a long time to think about it.
First one.
Rapid fire, man. Rapid fire.
Oh, I like now I'm just like totally jaded and I need to pass.
Alex.
Think about it for a second.
Oh, man. That's a real tough one.
So this is what you get when you ask chefs well, what this, restaurant they want to go to.
So many different
front of house people were a little bit easier. We're like, oh, we want to go to that pretty place or that pretty place. Chefs is like, oh, it's a life or death decision.
I wouldn't mind, like, really, that's tough.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm glad that we're double stumped. I felt like listening.
There's a lot of like, there's a lot of great stuff going on, like New Nordic cuisine, and I'd love to like get into that a little bit.
No.
I don't even know.
All right.
Honestly.
All right, Arpej.
This is Arpej.
I'd really like to. That's like somewhere I've like wanted to go to for a long time, and his food is super vegetable centric, which I think is cool, and it's just been one of those things that I've been talking about for a long, long time. And
remember, where is it?
Arpej is in Paris.
Paris, okay.
All right, so I know this is a question that all chefs have probably thought about themselves and probably ask each other, at least I think so. Alex, what is your deathbed meal?
Oof. Wow. That. So, honestly, I think it'd probably be Thai green curry. Favorite meal, hands down, like ever.
Beverage?
Oof. Scotch. Yeah. If I'm going out, I'm going out hot.
like Heaven's Gate's gonna be like, ah, sorry, sir. You're like, no, I have no drugs.
No drugs in my bags, guys. Just trust me. I'm not trying to open a food truck. I'm just coming in for New Year's Eve.
Probably like a perfect baguette with like really, really good butter and like French sea salt. And then beautiful. like omakase. That's just my favorite way to eat. It's what I enjoy the most. And then like a slice of my mother's key lime pie. I've thought about it.
You've coursed it out.
Oh, like, no, I know exactly. It's that's very calculated.
Hashtag
you got a good
mom.
One for me. Yes.
Okay, and shout finally here, we're going to, we're going to marry, fuck, kill.
Fuck, marry, kill.
All right, Eddie.
All right, this was my marry, fuck, kill, because I know both of you have a strong background in Asian cooking. Mm-hmm. So Asians love fermentation, so it's an Asian fermentation invasion edition. So marry, fuck, kill between these three Asian ingredients that are fermented. Fish sauce, miso, and kimchi.
Oh boy. I'm glad you picked ingredients and not people, because I was going to lose my mind. Fish sauce, marry. I'd fuck the shit out of some kimchi, and I'd just kill the miso, I think.
Kill the miso.
Yeah, I'd kill the miso.
Buy miso.
I could live with fish sauce in every dish.
But and you don't mind the burn of kimchi when you...
Well, you know, it's... Listen, it's gonna be a lot of fun. I mean,
Gerald.
This is a hard marry, fuck, kill because I love all three of them. But I'd say fish sauce also. Mary.
Wow. Yeah. Don't take my girl.
Fuck me so. And kill kimchi? Is really? Eddie Kim gonna be really upset about
I'm
this?
I'm upset at you now. Representing all Kims out there.
All the Kims that work at my restaurant currently.
Eddie.
Oh, me?
Yeah, fuck it. Fuck, marry, kill it.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, I have to marry kimchi. My mother would be angry at me if she
nice.
Didn't marry a nice,
nice
Korean girl.
Korean girl.
I'm gonna fuck miso. I'm gonna kill fish sauce. which kind of goes against all you guys, but I just remember a really bad memory in my childhood when my mom dropped a big bottle of fish sauce and it stunk up our house for like weeks and on end. So
I'm my choices mirror yours. We're in sync.
Thank you.
But there is fish sauce in kimchi. So have we thought about that at
theoretically
all?
You could use fish sauce and kimchi as a quick fermentation agent, but you could, I mean, there's oyster kimchi, which is a version of kimchi that that jumpstarts that fermentation. So you don't want necessarily fish sauce.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for hanging out with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
And for all our listeners, next week, join us. Bill Murray is going to visit us in the studio here at the Lion Hotel to discuss walk-ins versus reach-ins.
The debate continues.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.